Welcome to episode 17 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering season 1, episode 14. What do they call that, Ruthie?
The War Within, the War Without?
No.
Oh, what?
Your favorite word.
Oh, it's the penultimate!
Yes, the penultimate episode. I knew you were waiting to call it that. The War Without... The War Within.
I think I got that backwards anyway.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, oh crap, I didn't know I was going to have to say the title.
All right, before we get started with discussion of that, we've got quite a bit of discussion left over from last week. So let's open hailing frequencies. All right. So this is for season 1, episode 13. What's past is prologue. Our friend from the Netherlands, Fred, bringing up his feedback from last week. He says, two of my questions for episode 13 were, one, are they going to use Georgiou, Laurel, and Tyler in their new situation? Two, after recovery of A, the mycelium network, and B, Stamets, can they use the spore drive again? Well, not bad. On the other hand, four of my other questions were not so good. And his other questions, I have to look it up. He says, will they put Georgiou in the brig with Laurel and Tyler? Mm-hmm. Turns out Tyler wasn't even in the brig, so I guess that's a no.
Yeah, no kidding. That's funny.
Is Prime Universe Lorca alive? Well, it seems no, although we don't know that 100%. Will they try to go back in time to preventing the Klingons win the war? Well, and I'm kind of surprised about this. Seems like the answer is no. And then what's left of the Federation? Not a lot. So that's his first bit of feedback, but he also sent us some feedback prior to this week. So why don't you read that part?
Okay. He says, just want to have two thoughts out before episode 14 airs. One, I don't know on what energy source the Discovery engine runs, but what if all mycelium in the universe by accident or a catastrophe crystallizes into dilithium? This would explain no mycelium in Kirk's time and a good source for warp drive energy. What if the mirror universe Discovery is still in the Prime universe? Wouldn't Georgiou want to get on that ship and try to somehow get back to her own universe together with Captain Killy? How cool would it be if Killy and Tilly meet? Great, Fred.
Well, I agree. It would have been cool, but unfortunately, it seems like Captain Killy has been killied.
Yeah. they said that they saw the wreckage of the Discovery, so
yeah.
I can only assume that Terran Discovery is no more.
Seems that way. The Klingons got to it.
Which is kind of strange, because you would think that they would be in better battle mode or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it appears that Discovery runs on spores, so...
Not only spores, it has a warp drive too.
Right. I was going to say the spore drive runs on spores, and the warp drive runs on the usual stuff. Dilithium crystals and deuterium and whatever else they put into the matter-antimatter mix. Crystallizes into dilithium. That's an interesting, thing that I had not heard of or thought of. So maybe, but certainly we have to expect that this whole spore drive, you know, is no more at some point because, and I heard this brought up quite a bit this week about canon versus non-canon, yada, yada. And, you know, we still have this spore drive that in future iterations of Star Trek, at least in the Star Trek timeline or whatever, there's no mention of a spore drive. I mentioned, you know, several episodes back, but like when you think Janeway would have tried to find some tardigrades and build a spore drive to end up back home in seconds.
No kidding.
So either it ends up like the Mirror Universe from this week and they say, no one needs to know about this, or it just becomes something that is no longer sustainable. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'll move on to Todd. Speaking of last week's episode, he says, I really actually thought this was the best episode so far. I keep saying that. Yeah, so do I. It was awesome to see Landry again, even if it was Mirror Landry, and even if it was for a little while. By the way, I didn't say this last week, but I did not realize how beautiful Rika Sharma is. It was after watching her on After Trek that I like, my goodness, that woman is beautiful. I liked Saru really becoming captain. So did I. Stepping into his own, being in sync with Burnham. The whole initial fight with Lorca and Georgiou was pretty cool. And the twist when the Emperor and Burnham took control of Lorca's team, the Lorca-Burnham fight was great too. Did opening the moon door hurt anyone else's eyes? LOL. No, seriously, cool Game of Thrones reference. Yeah. Yeah. The moon door. Was the what's that kid? The forget his name on
I don't even know. His name isn't important enough he's not an important enough character for me to know his name.
Well, anyway.
He's the kid that breastfed until he could, you know, way too long.
Yeah, until he was about 12. Oh, yeah, I know. There's so many wrong people. Things. Yeah. So many wrong
don't do it. Just don't.
I only wish we saw the human version of just Ash Tyler over in the Mirrorverse. I mean, Mirrorverse version of just Ash Tyler. Because Mirror Volk is still totally himself, at least. I will pause and say, yeah, that would have been an interesting thing to see. Like, Ash Tyler before the merging of Volk, like, how different does he look? Does he look the same? Does he look different? We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what else to say. I like Georgiou being in the Prime Universe, and I think she will be the key, along with Laurel, to the humans resolving the war or moving forward from here. I'm curious, though, if they might use the slingshot around the sun idea to travel back 9 months or so to turn the tide of the war for the humans. I don't want it to be done, hoping next week we find Prime Universe Lorca somewhere and he comes back to be a crew member of Discovery, because I like the idea of Captain Saru and First Officer Burnham. Do you think that she will tell him she ate the alt version of him because awkward?
That's awkward.
Awkward. LOL. Come on next week. Yeah, well, some of that actually you nailed right on the nose there. And Todd, some things, obviously, I was really expecting this to be a time travel episode, and it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I thought by the end, or at least it was setting one up for next week. And that's not what we got this week. So, all right. We have one more bit of feedback from James. You want to read that?
Sure. All right. James says, something I wanted to bring up with last week was several people posing the question about the war map updating without contact with Starfleet. While they said they couldn't raise Starfleet on the comms, I would think they've got data bastions / beacons planted throughout the quadrant that are able to be tapped into with the proper credentials that would update their servers with vital information. You might think, yeah, but wouldn't the Klingons just destroy them? Which I would say, space is a big place, and these could be pretty small in stature and disguised to look like chunks of rock or what have you, and lie dormant unless being interfaced with so that they're not picked up on broad sensor sweeps. Just a little theory on that I've been kicking around that could make things feasible. And I say I was thinking something similar because, I mean, to me, in all probability, this is probably exactly what it is, because they communicate with each other over vast quantities of space with zero lag. So it has to be something, because if you've ever seen any kind of anything where they are communicating with like communicating with rovers on Mars or something, it takes a little while for the signal to get there.
Yeah.
So if they were somewhere outside of the solar system and trying to communicate with Earth, it would be like a 3-hour delay to have a conversation.
Yeah.
So my assumption has always been that there has to be something like that around, and that's what they did. Once you get back to your home Wi-Fi network, your phone automatically picks up your home Wi-Fi network. It's like that, I think.
Yeah. Well, there has to be some explanation for it. And, you know, like long range scans, I would think would tell certain, you know, things. It was one of those things that I questioned. It didn't. And I know I brought it up last week, but, you know, it wasn't something that like vastly, you know, caused me to like hate the episode or something. It was just like one of those like, huh? How'd that happen? I do want to bring up a couple of things. One thing that came up, and if you looked at the blog post of last week, I talked about it there. And the other thing I literally just came up with that I had wanted to say, but didn't put it in the blog post either. So first thing was after watching it again, and which I think I've watched last week now 10 times. And
wow.
Yeah, I told I sent a tweet to the writer there, Ted Sullivan, after I had watched it 9 times. He was impressed. So but I felt that I was a little disappointed with Lorca. The fact that he was so brilliant in the Prime universe, and when he got to the Mirror universe and we see his plan, he wasn't so brilliant. And, you know, he really fixated himself on Burnham, and I had to wonder, you know, why that was, you know, other than obsession. So I some of that felt a little forced to me, and that it was obvious that he learned nothing from his experiences in the Prime universe, because it sounds like he had been there for, you know, longer than 9 months. I mean, I still can't quite figure that out. Like, how long was he there? Like, was he there just during, you know, just around the time that the Buran was destroyed, or did he arrive sooner, or whatever? We know that his people were, you know, in the agonizers for, I think they said 1 year, 212 days.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it was quite a bit less than that. Maybe, you know, 7 months, 8 months, something like that. I don't know. Sometime during the war, I'm guessing. But, and then, you know, like what happened to Lorca? Did he end up, you know, switching and then get killed on the Mirror side, or what?
I think that he died on the Buran.
That's my thought as well.
Because we all know the captain goes down with the ship.
Yeah.
And based on the Prime universe, and Starfleet and all that, blah, 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 there's no way he would have ditched out.
Yeah.
If he could help it. So my personal thought is that Lorca died on the Buran, and this Lorca showed up and just said, oh, I had to abandon ship.
And, you know, there's a precedent for the Prime and the Mirror to switch, which seems to have happened with the Discovery, but they're definitely, and this also happened in Mirror Mirror, which I watched over the weekend just to refresh myself. And like in the Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes, they didn't switch. They did something to the transporter, and then like they had a little device, and then they did something to the transporter with it, and that ended up placing them in you know, the Mirror Universe or vice versa. So you know, it could have been either way, I guess. And I have a feeling we're never going to know at this point. So while I would love to see Prime Lorca, I don't think we're going to at this point. So, anyway, you had a thought with that.
Well, I said he only seemed brilliant in the Prime universe because no one else acted like him in Prime Universe, but he's less brilliant in the Muir Universe because everyone is like him there.
And you know, the thing that I'm running across in my mind now is, you know, we see what he did in the Prime Universe and think what a jerk he was, and look who's replaced him.
Yeah,
because I don't know what her end game is, but I can't think it's good. So we'll talk more about that shortly. But the other point I wanted to make that I should have mentioned is something peculiar that I don't know why I didn't mention this, but and I've not heard anybody say this, but when Burnham and Georgiou beam over to the Discovery, Burnham grabs Georgiou and, like, you know, bear hugs her as they're beaming out. And when they end up on Discovery, they're not together. They're like on separate, I guess, is it pads they consider, you know, separate parts of the transporter? They're separated. So how the heck did that happen?
The transporter automatically puts them on their own pads.
Is there a precedent for that?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Really? I can't ever remember that happening before. I'll take your word for it, but I
feel like that is, I don't know. I mean, that, I don't know. That was my first thought. And I think that would be why I would think no one has said anything, because we all know Brian.
Well, that could be. Anyway, well, that's certainly what seemed to happen. I was just, you know, thinking about it. It's like, I don't remember that ever
happening.
They
were still in the same position. Like, she was still looking over her shoulder at the figure that had just basically body snatched her, you know. Okay. She was in the exact same position. Like, her body was in the same position. It's just the transporter separated them out, because that's what the transporter does. Because technically they were on the same stream. Mm. So the transporter, because it's a transporter, and I don't know how transporter technology works. No one can explain it.
How can you not know?
It automatically, it knows. I don't know how it knows, but it knows, and it separates things that have different DNA sequences or whatever. I mean, that has been done before. You know that has been done before.
Yeah.
So it's the same concept, because they were in the same beam. The transporter separated them out.
Yeah.
And when a transporter separates things out, it puts them on their own pads.
I know I've seen this before. Like, maybe Star Trek 4? Of course, that was a Klingon bird of prey, so maybe it doesn't do it on a Klingon bird of prey.
I don't know. I think it's because it was one beam.
Yeah.
That it separated them out.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, I've seen before where people have landed on the transporter in various states of disarray, but they've each had their own beam. Mm-hmm. So that's what
I was trying to think of an example, and then all of a sudden that popped in my head. The whale doctor jumped onto Captain Kirk in that movie. So, all right, well, let's move on to this week. So season one, episode 14 was titled The War Without, The War Within, written by co-executive producer Lisa Randolph. And that's her second episode that she wrote. She also wrote The Wolf Inside, which is episode 11, and is directed by a longtime TV director who's got a long list of shows on his resume, David Solomon. And some of them are Midnight Texas, which Ruthie would remember because it was running late. I thought they were going to change the title to 1 a.m. Texas. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Zoo, Rosewood, which I know isn't a genre TV thing, but Grimm, Unreal, which I've heard the title of, but I don't know what it's about. Extant, Falling Skies, Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, Fringe, Nikita, and Dollhouse, among many others. So, as I say, he's got a long list of science fiction fantasy on his resume. All right. And I did not get into it, but I will with the news, with our shipwide announcement. All right. So I've got a bunch of news. First thing, Sonequa Martin-Green and Mary Chifo who plays Laurel, did a Facebook Live Q&A, which we have a link to on our Facebook group, which of course is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. So that's been recorded and you can watch it online. I actually watched that live and it was great when it wasn't stalling. I had to connect to it about 15 times, but Parrot Analytics, and I included several screen captures from their videos. So a company called Parrot Analytics, they do analysis of TV shows on social media and indicate who's hot and who's not, basically. And Star Trek Discovery has been really hot. So the last 3 weeks, it was for the first week, for the it's actually episodes 10, 11, and 12 they have data for. So for the first week that it came back, Star Trek Discovery was third overall and number one in digital originals. But since then, it has been number one overall and beating shows like The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Shameless, Vikings, Stranger Things, Black Mirror. Like, it's beating everything that you could possibly think it would it could possibly go up against. So and it's just been getting more and more traffic. So like the last data that they have, 59,337,881 impressions. And that's, I don't know how they do this, but that's just the US. So I don't know how it is for the world, but that's pretty impressive. And considering all the things that have been going on in this show, I think that is very understandable because it's been blowing people's minds, myself included. Our Walking Dead talk through usually has a ton of stuff for ratings. I do have a little bit of stuff, courtesy of Clint from our Facebook group. He gave them to me and gave me the link to, so that I know where to get them from now on.
Thanks, Clint.
Well, I don't have much to say. it got 28th position for episode 11 with 1,007,000 viewers in Canada, and it didn't make the top 30, and that's all they give you for episode 12, which the 30th position was 907,000, so it's probably just under that, I imagine. This is not a Star Trek thing, but it's kind of sort of related. You'll understand it. When you were a kid, did you ever watch the show In Search Of?
Maybe.
Well, that was a show that I know both my wife and I watched quite religiously when we were kids. It was, like sort of like Unsolved Mysteries, sort of like.
I was going to say, I watched Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah. Well, it talked about, science and the paranormal and things like that, like the Bermuda Triangle and UFOs and Bigfoot and all of that stuff. Well, and that was hosted by Leonard Nimoy, and Zachary Quinto, who, of course, plays Spock in, the reboot movies, he is hosting and executive producing a reboot of the show on the History Channel. So, and it will, cover similar phenomenon like UFO, time travel, artificial intelligence, and all of that stuff. So, I don't know if it... when it's going to debut, but I imagine it'll probably be on, next season. So that's pretty cool. I do want to watch that. And I have to wonder if Zachary Quinto is trying to have Leonard Nimoy's career at this point. Although he's done a lot of other TV, especially. Another thing that also has somewhat of a Star Trek Discovery relation, American Gods. We've talked about that show before. They've announced the showrunner for season two, and that is Jesse Alexander. Now, why do I bring that up? Well, of course, it was created and the co-showrunner of it was the former showrunner of Star Trek Discovery, Brian Fuller. And Jesse Alexander, you may recognize because he was a co-executive producer on Star Trek Discovery. And I know he had written, I think, one or two episodes in the first half. So I thought that was cool. And I have one more thing which came up on my iPhone news today, and that was that, and you'll want to know this because this had to do with scientists at the University of Oklahoma, which you are very close to.
It's my alma mater.
Yeah. Using information from NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and a planet detection technique called microlensing to study a distant quasar galaxy, scientists at the University of Oklahoma found evidence that there are approximately 2,000 extragalactic planets for every one star beyond the Milky Way.
Wow.
That sounds incredible. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Now I don't know if everything they're calling a planet is a planet, but anyway, that says some of the exoplanets are relatively small as the moon, while others are as massive as Jupiter. Unlike Earth, most of the exoplanets are not tightly bound to stars, so they actually are wandering through space or loosely orbiting between stars. And there's a quote, it's from one of the professors. He says, we can estimate that the number of planets in this far away galaxy is more than a trillion. Wow.
Wow, indeed.
All right, this episode. What did you think, and what was your rating for? I don't want to make the same mistake as last week.
I was going to say, if you ask me what I think again, I'll tell you.
All right, so what was your rating for season 1, episode 14, The War Without, The War Within?
I really, really like this episode, so I'm going to give it a 9.85 remarkable resemblances.
All right. I may change this rating as I go. I don't know. I was trying to think if I needed to or not. I gave it a good rating, but lower than some of the other ones this particular half season. I gave it a 9.25. Multiple Prime Universe Discovery Captains from the Mirror Universe. And that one I really struggled with because the one that I wanted to use, everyone else used.
Ha, so, that's funny.
Yeah.
Only one other person used the one that I was going to use. So I came up with a different one.
All right. So we have some listener ratings. So Ruthie, you want to start?
Okay. Mark Olivier says, I give this episode 7 out of 10 zapped bowls of fortune cookies. And there are some fortune cookie emojis.
Steve gives it 8 out of 10 species reassignment protocols.
That's the one I was going to use.
All right.
James says, this week's rating, 7 Tyvoks don't understand the women folk. No, young man, you weren't in your right mind, but she's not making excuses. To which I replied, amen, brother.
Yeah, I have that in my yeses, and I'll explain it when we get there. Mark gave it 8 vaporized fortune cookie bowls.
Stefan says 7 almost bye-byes to season 1 out of 10.
And Fred from the Netherlands gives it 9.7 out of 10 blown up bowls of Chinese fortune cookies. Gee, Ruthie, can you guess what I was going to use? I was going to call it vaporized fortune cookies. And it seemed like everyone else had the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It is time for our yeses.
Yes.
I never get tired of listening to Data say that. All right. We got some that given voicemail, but we got some that were just written out. So Steve had 3. He says, Captain Saru ordering the jump to warp when Cornwell froze. Yeah, I thought that was good. Again, another example of Saru taking command and being a captain. I really hope he gets the chair permanently. The crew following Tilly to accept Tyler. And Michelle Yeoh's portrayal of Georgiou is great. Yes, I would agree with that. Boy, she was tearing up the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next.
Okay, next. James says, Saru taking charge again while Cornwell was clearly flustered. And also, Detmer's screen time seems to be increasing.
Yes, it does. And I think, I'm hoping in season two that a lot of those bridge officers get more screen time. We get to, you know, learn more about them. All right. It's time for our yeses. Do you want to start?
No, I'll let you go ahead.
All right. Well, people may have used my rating, but I'm going to still use it for my yeses. Cornwell vaporizing Lorca's fortune cookies. In many ways, I think that might have been my favorite scene. and it was one of those things that when I first watched it, I don't know, I mustn't have been watching too closely, or I was looking away. I didn't see exactly what she shot, but then when I saw it the second time, I'm like, ah, that's hilarious. And, you know, mm-hmm. she calls him a bastard and then shoots the fortune cookies, which makes me wonder if Prime Lorca had the fortune cookie obsession or if that was just Mirror Lorca.
Wait, what?
I wonder if Prime Lorca had the same obsession or if that was just Mirror Lorca. And that was like a one way that he was different that she didn't catch, you know, she didn't clue in on, because she was still, Cornwell was mad that she didn't realize that he wasn't the same Lorca. And, you know, of course, Sarek said, well,
that's not really the leap you make.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, at the time, like,
which is true.
Well, up until now, they had, you know, the Prime Universe had no inkling of the Mirror Universe. So thinking
that's not true.
How do you figure?
They talked about it, didn't they? Did someone beforehand go over there?
The episodes that took place for Enterprise were literally just following the Mirror Universe characters on Enterprise.
Okay.
And, you know, so
I was thinking of something else anyway. Never mind.
Okay. So that's my first yes. Do you have one or should I give my second one?
Yeah, go ahead with your second one, because I'm going to piggyback off of
that. Okay, good. And this is kind of a sort of a social thing, or kind of a, you know, art imitates reality kind of thing. I actually appreciated a lot, and I'm glad that Burnham broke up with Tyler, because it's a bad example to set. Like, I'm thinking of, you know, all the examples that I've seen of, you know, in reality and in TV too, for that matter, where, you know, the abusive boyfriend, the girlfriend stays with him, or, you know, forgives him or whatever. And yes, of course, you know, he was out of his head. He wasn't, you know, he's not responsible for his actions, whatever, whatever, whatever. But I think that it's too close to home in a lot of ways. I think that that's a sci-fi version of just, you know, crazy guy, you know, acting crazy, hitting his girlfriend, and then, you know, saying, I don't know what got into me, and blah, 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 blah. You know, and I have, you know, pretty strong opinions about, like, never hit the person you love or anything like that.
Or try and strangle them.
Or try and kill them, you know, like he did. So, yes, he wasn't responsible for it, but at the same time, I don't think it's realistic for Burnham to turn around and just forgive him for that and stay with him. Maybe over time it might happen, but certainly, you know, her breaking up with him, I think, was the correct thing to do. And I, like I say, just looking at it in terms of real, you know, 21st century people versus, you know, the 23rd century. If she had stayed with him, I think it would have set a bad precedent. So that's my thought. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you about that situation. I feel bad for him, but I kind of feel like he comes at her a little hard and a bit unfairly. And I think there's nothing wrong with her feeling the way that she feels. And to me, the way that he comes at her when she expresses a little bit of,
trepidation?
Well, doubt, maybe. Doubt. That she, it's not really doubt so much as it's, I can't think of the word I'm trying to describe her, how she's feeling, but when she kind of hedges toward, I don't think I could be with you anymore, he hits back super hard and really unfairly, I think. And to me, that shows right there that there's no way that he can be in a relationship, because that's manipulative and emotionally abusive to her as well, by saying things that, while they may be true, those true things don't negate what happened between them.
Exactly.
And what happened with that situation, that while he might not have been in full control of himself, she's right. He did lie to her and tell her that he would come to her when it got to be too much, or whatever was happening with him, when he couldn't handle it, but he didn't. And so I think she's right to feel the way that she feels, but it's also manipulative and emotionally, I don't know, manipulative is the only word I can think of right now, but it's not fair of him to put his redemption on her shoulders. Like, that's completely something that a codependent person in a codependent type of relationship would do. And I agree with you also that I don't think that she should have stayed with him. And I'm glad also that she did not allow herself to be guilted into staying with him by him saying that, I can't do it without you. You know, that's like, also, I mean, it's a codependent relationship. It's an enabling relationship.
Yeah.
Because how is he going to ever make it by himself if he always has to have another person there with him? And I agree that she could show him support and encouragement and all that kind of stuff, but the way that he's going about it, his character anyway, is just completely wrong. And I'm really glad that she, even though I feel really bad for him, I'm really glad that she did not allow herself to be, I guess, sucked back in, more or less. Like you said, it would set a bad precedent. It's a terrible situation that I wouldn't really wish on anyone. But at the same time, she should be allowed to feel how she feels, and how she feels is betrayed, even though it wasn't necessarily him doing it. As she said, it was still his hands wrapped around her neck. And I don't think that anyone could be faulted for needing to at least take a breather from that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, on the flip side of that, yes, I do feel really super bad for Tyler because of the situation that he's in. And I love, my yes, I guess, would go to Tilly, because she, again, I mean, she's just my superstar, I think, all the time. She goes to sit with him, and he says, I'm okay. And she says, how could that possibly be true?
Yeah.
And I love that she is able to set aside what might be a crippling circumstance, you know, basically. And she tells Michael, we are shaped by our environment. And I like that she sticks up for him, even though she says, even if it's just to say goodbye, you need to go talk to him. And I think by doing that, she is like, that whole little scene between Michael and Tilly reminds us that, yes, this is the Star Trek universe. This really is the more idealistic and more optimistic universe of Star Trek that we're used to, because that's what they do in Starfleet. You know, they stick up for the little guy. They don't like to see things that are unfair, or that are, they don't like injustices and that kind of stuff. And I really, really like that scene, because I think that that also points out that, hey, yeah, this has been a little bit of a stranger, darker Star Trek or what have you, but it is still Star Trek. And you can see, based on how the Terrans were and how they acted, and how the Starfleet people act, that yeah, it does. Your environment can change you, which is why I was worried for the characters if they had to stay too long in the Terran universe.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like you say, like, there, so many people, you know, say this isn't Star Trek and all that stuff. It's like, you don't know what you're saying, because this is Star Trek. This, you know, it's an updated Star Trek. There, you know, it's a different way of telling stories. And I've continued my rewatch of Deep Space Nine. I'm not like that far from where I was last week. I'm still on season 4. And even though that has some serialized elements to it, it's still very episodic. And, you know, this, and we'll talk, I think, a little bit more about this as we uncover some of the feedback. I think you can't judge anything about the show at this point, characters, plot, anything, until the season is over next week. I think you need to keep an open mind, because there's all sorts of things that could happen that would close up any differences with canon very easily. And because we don't really know all that, or didn't, I should say, really know all that much about the war with the Klingons, the first war. We knew that there was the second war that we see on TOS that I don't think lasted that long, but that was the Organian Peace Treaty. But there was a war preceding that, and that's this war. And, you know, there wasn't much about it. Now, the fact that, you know, they're losing so badly, that's new. That's something that I didn't know about. But nevertheless, you know, a lot of things could happen next week. And but anyway, getting back to the Burnham and Tilly points. Tilly, yes, I really agree with you 100%. I love her character, and I love that she came to him. And I think that it's easier for her and, you know, other characters that have dealt with him to be more, you know, accepting, be more there for him than Burnham, because they didn't get, you know, an attempt on their life. and he, like, he didn't lie to them either. And because I think that she made a great point, because he did lie, and that was him. That wasn't Vok. That was him. Mm-hmm. So anyway, do you have any more yeses, or should we move on to the noes?
I really appreciated, right after Admiral Cornwell froze and Saru gives the order, he basically is being a great, I don't know, second officer or second in command or what have you, because he puts the he effectively puts her back in charge by saying, "Discovery awaits your orders."
Yeah,
kind of like snap out of it.
and yet he took charge when he needed to take charge, because
literally
they had to get the heck out of there ASAP. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I'm telling you, the last couple episodes, I'm really, really impressed with him. He was not my favorite character
in the beginning, me neither.
Yeah, and now he's just done such a turn. And poor, you know, Saru having to find out about, you know, being the part of the all-you-can-eat Terran buffet.
Yeah. But I really appreciated, again, with his character and his character growth, I appreciated that he didn't make a big deal out of the "you lied" thing. He said that "you lied to me" kind of a thing, because he was surprised and shocked. But when she came back with "I didn't want to hurt you,"
yeah,
I think he was able to identify with that, because he also knows that there are things that he didn't tell her.
Yeah.
And because he didn't want to stress her out with having, you know, what she's having to deal with and all that jazz. So I feel like he understands, and he didn't make any further big deal about it, because he was kind of like, oh, all right, cool.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated the way that he was able to understand about saving Giorgio to begin with. He said, it might end up being a bad decision, but I can see why you did it, kind of a thing. And then also, when he didn't order Michael to go see Tyler. So
I thought that was good too. I'm going to raise it to a 9.5. I think that's a, I had a feeling, now that we're talking through it, I think I was a little harsh on it. So I didn't really have a reason why it was a 9.25. So, all right. Time for no's.
No!
Okay.
All right. Steve is first. He has a couple. He says, the crew following Tilly to accept Tyler, all of them was a bit much. I think some would still not trust him, especially when word gets out that he killed Culber. And he also says, it seemed way too easy to grow new spores. To your first no, I would agree with that to a point. I mean, it did seem like, you know, everybody just, you know, came over and was almost too accepting of him. You know, like, you can see two or three coming over, but it seemed like the whole mess hall was coming over to talk to him. So I would agree with that, I think. And too easy to grow spores makes you wonder, like, well, why didn't he do that before? Like, what was his name? Strahl, I think, his partner.
I don't know.
Was, you know, so adamant against it. It seems like for it to be that much of a home run, you would have thought that they would have done that before now. So, yeah, I agree with you, Steve.
I will give that it did seem a little convenient that it was so easy to get new spores, but I completely disagree with the first note. I think it's completely believable because we are herd animals and we follow the leader. And when Tilly stood up and was like, I'm doing this, then everyone else, like good little sheeple, followed along. That's how we do. That's how people are. When someone stands up and tells other people, basically by their actions, this is how we behave, generally speaking, people fall in line. So I completely don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they would all go, oh yeah, you know, I feel for the guy, blah, 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 whatever they're thinking in their head or saying in their head. Because I don't think it was everybody. I mean, it did show that there were a few people who did more than could sit at the table, but that's not the entire ship.
Yeah.
That's just those people in the mess hall.
Those sheeple.
Not even, yeah. That's right. Not even necessarily all of those people in the mess hall, just a few that we could see. I don't know.
I happen to notice, by the way, there was one female character, one officer that I think was like one table over or something that I'd never seen before. It looked like all of her alien makeup was like war paint or something. Did you notice that? There's one particular alien that I thought was kind of weird looking.
I did not notice that.
Mm. Anyway. All right. James is next.
All right. James says, giving Emperor Georgiou command without properly briefing the crew of the reality of the situation. This can potentially divide the crew if things go south. Those loyal to Georgiou, like Detmer or others that know her reputation, may blindly follow her if she takes things off course.
Well, and it seems that, you know, the only ones that seem to know that it's Mirror Georgiou for sure. And I happen to think that the secret's going to be out pretty soon, next week, because judging the way that Georgiou acts, she does not act like the prime.
The other Georgiou?
Yeah. And I think, especially with them spending as much time as they did in the Mirror Universe, I think, you know, officers like Detmer and, you know, some of the other bridge officers are going to definitely pick up on the fact that she is not behaving, you know, the way that they expect, but especially Detmer, because she was an officer on the Shenzhou as well, you know, so.
Yeah, I was wondering how many of the crew actually know who she really is. Is it just the transporter room guy and the top crew? Like, I bet Stamets probably knows. Or is it only Saru, the transporter guy, and Michael? And of course, Sarek and the Admiral.
I think that's all that know. And I have a feeling that curly haired transporter guy won't survive because Georgiou will kill him or something.
Is he going to get reassigned?
He's a copper shirt.
That's funny.
Yeah. So anyway,
yeah, I'm pretty sure everyone has the exact same feeling about this. And that is, this is not good.
It is not a good idea. It just goes to show the desperation that, you know, and we see that, especially Cornwell, when they arrive at Starbase One, and, you know, we can see her reaction. She's just like completely taken aback. And yeah, they're desperate. And, you know, I don't think, like, I don't know what her end game is, as I said before, but it's not good. It's just not good. She's going to either, you know, try to wipe out the Klingons, and if that's the case, we know that's not going to work, so that's a good thing, I guess. Or she's going to, you know, okay, here's a crazy theory. What if she gets the same surgery that that Vok had and becomes a Klingon? Huh. And she ends up running the Empire, you know, she is more Klingon than the Klingons in some ways. So I don't know if that's not my theory, but that's a long shot, but it was something I thought of today. I'm like, well, that would be interesting. I can't see that ever happening, but it would be interesting. But, anyway, she's going to be up to no good. And I think we're going to end up having a mutiny again on the Discovery, and it's not going to just be Burnham this time. I think the, you know, many of the other Discovery crew are going to take part in this, because she's going to do Cornwell and even Sarek, which I can't believe Sarek, you know, went along with this.
I absolutely can.
Yeah, can you?
It's logical.
I don't know, but it's just a bad idea.
He's the one who said something like Starfleet has gotten us nowhere, right?
Well, that's true. Another thought was, you know, that Georgiou could end up running Section 31, because whatever she's going to do, that seems right up the alley of Section 31. So I don't know. I'm very curious to see where this goes. I have no idea. I have no idea where this is going to go next week. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I love that. I was so convinced that this week was going to be, you know, either time travel or the start of a time travel episode. And that's not what we got. And I'm just like, wow, they didn't go there. And, you know, now they've got to come up with a different way to resolve the story that doesn't have time travel in it. And I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Yeah. My response to this was, what could possibly go wrong? Said no one ever.
Yeah.
Totally. I think, like I said, I think everybody knows this is not going to go well. We just don't know how it's going to go wrong. All right. That's a good one. James also says that the ever unreliable threat ganglia again. I think we can all agree that this just needs to be gone away from. We all kind of knew what was going to happen with Starbase One without that little tidbit.
I think Saru should just, you know, cut them off and let Georgiou eat them.
Oh, gosh.
You know, not kill them in the process, but that would be one way to get rid of them. Anyway, all right. Our nose. Do you have any no's?
No.
All right. Well, I have one, and that is something, and it will come up again in the spot, the 47. But the star dates that Cornwell gave are out of sequence. Like, for example, I believe, and I didn't go back, but I believe the star dates in the first part of the season were like 13 something or 14 something, and the first one she gives is 4789.6. And I believe if you go back to TOS, they were in the twos and threes, 2000 and 3000. So clearly those star dates were not right, and i I really surprised that they got that wrong.
Yeah.
So,
because Star Trek, let's see, Star Trek: The Next Generation was Stardate 41000.
Yeah, 41000. Yeah.
And onward. Maybe because it's only four numbers instead of five. I don't know.
Looking up to see if they gave it in. Yeah. Okay. At least according to Memory Alpha, the very first episode of the original series that aired, anyway, The Man Trap, had a star date of 1513.1. So that is not compatible then with the 47s. Although I'm very happy that they gave a 47. So, but yeah, I'm really surprised they got that wrong. So, and yeah, maybe Jane Brooke, you know, read it wrong and the director didn't catch it or something, but I don't know. I have to think that they would have caught it. So anyway, so that's one gaffe. It's not the first time we've ever seen them screw up stardates. So, you know, I guess we shouldn't be too worked up about it.
No, but that is something that seems like it could be simple to get right or wrong, considering I'm staring at an entire history of Stardate stuff on the one of the fan wikis. So,
and it's also, you know, possible that they could have they could say that the Stardates are, you know, redesigned or something between now and that's TOS.
Right.
Yeah.
Here we have year stardate source 2155 January 13th DIS vaulting ambition 0141.7 the Vulcan hello 1207.3
yep
2256 May 11 Star Trek Into Darkness 2259
yep. Anyway, there's a lot of people, like we say, that's not canon. In fact, we'll hear some of that later on the feedback. But to me, this is a gaffe that they shouldn't have made. It's, you know, it's a minor thing. It's a minor thing. It's not, I'm not one of those fans that would, like, you know, have a conniption fit because they get the star dates wrong. But it is something they should have gotten right. All right. Well, it is now time to open hailing frequencies and start with our voicemails. We got a couple of voicemails. One, of course, was from Mark, and I'll play that now. Oops. Anyway, I did that intentionally. Here's Mark's real voicemail.
Hi, Ruthie. Hi, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for The War Without, The War Within. I give this episode 8 vaporized fortune cookie bowls. Now, I'm going to start with my turbolift down and turbolift up moments. Down, I didn't like the fact that Saru met Michael in the transporter room where he discovered that Georgia was there as well. But when they walked out, it seemed that Michael was completely up to date on what had happened and the state of the war because she didn't question anything. She just kind of got into the conversation. Does that mean that he discussed everything with her in the presence of Georgiou? I doubt it. So how was she up to date? Another down moment is just finding out that Captain Killy is dead. Oh, I really wanted to see her in action. Now, I didn't like the Saru and Tyler scene, especially when Saru tells Tyler he's going to have his freedom of the ship. He doesn't want to keep him locked up because I see no semblance of Vok before me. You didn't see any semblance of Vok before when he was Vok. You can't tell just by looking at him. That's ridiculous. Now, another down moment is the fact that Michael is present at all the important meetings, everything that has to do with the high command and all the upper-ups. She's not an officer in Starfleet anymore. Why is she present? Especially considering they know that the reason she's there is that she was freed from prison by Lorca, who they now know was not one of them. So I don't understand why the Admiral would want Michael sitting in on everything. My last down moment is, once again, Saru's ganglia. They appeared at the right moment, but what's the point of having them if he doesn't say anything? He just was surprised that they came out, touched him a little bit, and that was it. If he has this ability, why doesn't he say something? They hadn't dropped out of warp. He didn't even try warning the Admiral that there was something up. Anyways. And for my Turbolift up moments, there's really only one, and that's Tilly deciding to sit with Tyler. I just thought that was a nice move, and then everybody else came over, especially the way they were all looking at him and kind of whispering about him. And I just thought that was nice. Now, don't get me wrong, I know I had a lot of downs and only the one up, but I really did enjoy this episode. Well, my thoughts on the episode? Well, Brian, we got a 47. The Admiral mentioned when they were talking about the war, Stardate 4789.6 was the first attack on wherever, but the 47 came in there, so we got one in this episode. And we also kind of got a reason to why we've never heard of a spore drive before, and it makes sense that they would want to hide it and keep it a secret from the rest of the Federation, because especially after the war, if anybody knew they can go visit or see their loved ones again, they might try to take advantage of it. So maybe that's the whole reason. Maybe spore drives do exist. They're just being kept classified. Now I'm trying to figure out what they shot down at the moon in order to terraform it, because Stamets had only that one plant he said he had left. And yet they shot stuff all over that moon. What did they do? Dissect the plant up into little pieces and send little bits of it everywhere? I don't understand that whole process. But one thing I can tell you is those spores sure generated fast. Almost too fast. I found it a little unbelievable that you shoot them down in the planet and then you fire off those EMs and next thing you know, you've got forests growing. It was almost a little too convenient. Now, I really don't give a hoot one way or the other about the whole Michael-Tyler relationship, although I don't blame Michael at all for how she feels. I mean, everybody keeps telling her that she has to talk to him and it will do him good, but I don't blame her one bit for the way she feels. And as far as Tyler goes, I have no idea if we should be trusting him or not. He seems reformed, and everybody seems to think that Vok is gone, but don't forget that it was Laurel that performed the procedure. So how do we know she didn't just put him back into quote-unquote hiding, and he's once again a sleeper agent? I don't know if we'll ever be able to trust him again. And Giorgio is now captain of Discovery. She made a deal with Sarek and the Admiral for her freedom, but I can't help seeing the similarities between her and Tyler. The Admiral said that Georgiou was rescued from a Klingon prison vessel. Well, that's the exact same story that we got from Tyler. Is anybody going to question whether she's a Klingon? And even if they don't, what will the Discovery's crew do when they find out that they've been twice duped into following a leader from the Terran Empire? And what exactly are Philippa's motives? And my biggest question about this episode is how will that transporter operator cope with the knowledge that his new captain is a fraud, but it would be treasonous to say anything about it? That's what I really wonder about. Anyways, keep up the great work, guys. Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
Mark, as usual, gonna have to come up with something better than a showcase winner, I think, at some point. Anyway. You make some great points as usual. I had not thought of the part about Michael being up to speed right after beaming in, but you nailed that one. I have to 100% agree with you on that, because there didn't seem to be any time or any place where she could have gotten fully up to speed. So I don't know. I assume that maybe there was some walking in the corridor that we didn't get to see, or maybe some discussion right after Giorgio gets beamed to her quarters. I don't know, but
yeah, because she got beamed out super quick.
Yeah, I agree. No Captain Killy. That was really something I wanted to see. And poor Captain Killy, if you could say that. But it would have been it would have been nice to see the real Captain Killy. Because I imagine she would have said something more than, hold your horses!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And fantastic points that you made about Saru never sensing Vok before. The only time that we saw him kind of react and, you know, with his threat ganglia coming out was, I think, when Tyler came on the bridge in episode 10. You know, after they were already in the mirror universe, we saw it then. And, you know, at the time I assumed that that's what it was. So, But other than that, you know, he never did before. So,
well, I think what he was talking about, honestly, was after he had that little mental break or whatever, when they first beamed him back on to the ship from space and he was wigging out. I personally took that to be what Saru was talking about. As in, well, you are clearly calm now and does not appear to be any conflict within you. I think basically what he's saying is, I'm not going to confine you to the brig because that would be like punishing someone who got body snatched or something, or yeah, their body got hijacked, basically. He had a stowaway on board, pretty much, or he was the stowaway and then he took over. I don't know. It's confusing. But in any case, I feel like he doesn't want to punish Tyler or the Tyler persona or whatever, because honestly, I don't know who is... Did Tyler's body get turned into Klingon, or did the Klingon body get turned into human or something? I think that's kind of what happened, so...
Yeah, yeah.
He's got both personalities in his head, so now he's doesn't know what he is or who he is or whatever. I think that's what Saru was responding to, is that he doesn't get the vibe anymore that I'm going to kill you all and, you know, yelling in Klingon and blah, blah, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, because it's true. I mean, what good is punishing Tyler going to do? He feels guilty. That's honestly, in some cases, there is nothing that for certain people, there's nothing that society can do that you aren't already doing to yourself.
Well, that's true.
If you really are the kind of person who feels guilty about this, that, or whatever, you know, then you're going to beat yourself up more than any penal code could.
And he literally was possessed.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. And
well, he had a sleeper personality in there that was trying to take over.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. And conquered by love. Yeah, because it was something that the doctor, and I wonder, this Dr. Pollard, that was her name, is she the CMO?
Is she? Yeah.
I hope so. I think we had seen her, you know, in the like two episodes ago. I think that's the same doctor we saw. But, you know, she actually gets a name now, Dr. Pollard. I hope that they finally identify her as the CMO, because that's a mystery that needs to be addressed. There was one podcast that I was listening to that was making a big thing about, you know, who's the chief engineer? But I hate to tell you, other podcast, the chief engineer is Stamets. We actually saw that on screen. So Stamets is the chief engineer of the Discovery. So, but we don't know who the CMO is, and we know it wasn't Culber. So anyway, Burnham being in there, well, I have to think that that was kind of a plot device thing, you know, because eventually Burnham's going to get her command back. She's going to get it, you know, it just has to be, because I mean, she's done so much at this point to earn her rank back, or at least earn a rank. But, you know, they haven't done it yet, probably because, you know, it's war and they've been busy. So, but I have to think that Cornwell or someone who's of authority will eventually give her back, maybe not back to full commander, but, you know, bring her to ensign or lieutenant or something. Because so much, like, Saru said, only she could have done what she did in the Mirror Universe. And I think that's 100% right. And so much that, you know, she's done. She killed, or actually, I keep saying that she killed Cole. She didn't kill Cole, but she was instrumental in his defeat, was also instrumental in, you know, solving the cloaking device stuff. And, you know, she's been this amazing officer slash crew member slash specialist, who has sometimes an impulse problem. But other than that, you know, she's done all this work. Because I know Adam a couple of times, you know, has singled that out. Like, you know, why is she the one? But at this point, we've seen her do so many incredible things that I think she's earned it. But then again, I know there are some other people that don't love her character too much. So I'm not one of them, but there was a conversation on Twitter that I'm thinking of that was actually brought had several podcasts in it talking about Burnham's character. And I think that she's a great character. So anyway,
I did kind of notice slash think about that when I was watching, like, no one else of low rank is in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she is kind of doing stuff. So,
yeah. And, you know, she has been instrumental in that stuff. So I understand why she's there, but it is kind of funny. Yeah. It's kind of like having a red shirt in there, but mm-hmm. she's not really a red shirt. Sorry, a copper shirt.
Oh, geez.
So he brings up the idea of that the spore drives are classified. So essentially what? So the tie to the fact that they could bring you to the mirror universe makes it so that nobody knows of their existence after this. I would say possible, but I don't know. There's still the whole spore drive thing to me is still a huge question.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that I can simply just say, well, let's just, you know, make it classified and make sure that nobody knows about it, because that seems to me that would not explain, like, for example, the Voyager thing, or, you know, many other things that I would think would have played into, you know, previous versions of Star Trek. So to me, the spore drive cannot continue into the 23rd century and go into the 24th century. I could see it going far into the future, but not beyond that. I don't know. Well, we'll see. I reserve all judgment to this show until next week. And I may, you know, I've said this a few times, may have said this last week. I said this a few times online about, I'm really hoping that the show sticks the landing. And, you know, because it's all, so many things could go wrong next week and so many things could go right. And I have the confidence that every, you know, almost wholly go right. But then again, they could really screw up. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I thought it was interesting that they chose to solve the spore drive problem instead of just letting it die so that there would be no more spore drive. So I am, based on that, I guess I'm kind of assuming that they have some kind of plan for how they're going to get rid of the spore drive so that it's not, so that not, no, so basically so that we're not all like, well, why didn't they just use that the whole time? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hope that's the case anyway, because I don't really want to have a hand wave as to why they don't use the spore drive anymore. I want it to actually be something.
Yeah. It can't be a hand wave thing. It's got to be the spore drive doesn't work anymore, or something like that, or spores are extinct without killing the universe.
Mm-hmm. You
know, or the tardigrade DNA has degraded and they don't have any more, or I don't know.
Yeah.
So I see you were able to find something about stardates.
Oh, well, I just was looking at this website as I was looking at it. They said, in the original Trek TV series, stardates were, in a word, bogus. The writers were basically told to wing it. So they didn't actually start meaning something until the Next Generation.
Hmm.
And then there's this whole formula, blah, blah, stuff that my eyes started to glaze over because I was also trying to pay attention to more than one thing at once, which is hard to do.
Well, I know that stardates, you know, started from 4-1 and they continued until, I think they got into the fives, in Deep Space Nine and Voyager. But it's basically like with each season, it would go from 4-1, blah, 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 to 4-2, blah, 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 to 4-3, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So.
I don't have any idea. I'm just going based on what this website said.
Yeah.
That they didn't mean anything in the original series, and then they started making them mean something starting with Next Gen.
All right, well, shall we move on to the next voicemail?
Yep.
All right, our next one is from Fred. And Fred, this time I'm playing it in the episode. No screw up this time. Okay, here we go.
Hi, Brian and Ruthie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback on episode 14. What an episode. Great plot development. Great explanation of a lot of questions we had. Great emotional scenes and great acting of all the main actors. I think there were great, great interactions between several of the main figures of the Discovery. For instance, Sarek and Georgiou in Georgiou's room, Stamets and Tyler in the corridor, very well played. Tilly and Tyler in the mess hall, very touching. Sarek and Michael when Sarek is leaving the Discovery, and I wonder where he's going. He's going to Vulcan with the transporter. Are they that close to Vulcan? I don't know. Saru and Tyler in the sick bay. Corwell and Laurel in the brig. And Tilly and Michael in engineering. All very, very nice scenes and very nicely acted. Great lighting again. And as for the last three episodes, I will make a series of so-called Fred's beautiful lighting screenshots, of which Brian can use a few if he likes. And other people can find them at petrified_Fred on Twitter. The lighting was again so good that I even had more than 30 screenshots, of which I would say very, very nice. But I had to make a selection. What are my yeses? One of my yeses is when Georgiou is getting her command, her smug face. I also noticed that her face was looking a little bit more friendlier. So kudos to the makeup department and Michelle Yao for changing so much with so little. I will give this episode a 9.7 out of 10, and that will be blown up bowls of Chinese fortune cookies. One big yes, I also find Cornwell, when she is talking to Laurel, all her facial expressions is a very nice acting. So that's a big, big yes. And also a big yes is the terraformed moon by all the spores, which looked also very nice. So that was all for me for this time. See you next time. Greetings, Fred. Or actually, talk to you next time. Or write to you next time. Not see. Well, perhaps. You never know. Greetings, Fred.
You never know. Well, it's true. You never do know.
Sarek, I don't think... Well, he definitely didn't beam to Vulcan. He beamed over to a ship, and I don't think he ended up in Vulcan, but on Vulcan. But he definitely didn't beam there. That was one thing that I picked up on.
All right.
The whole terraforming thing, it was cool. I do agree with some of the people that. It seemed to go very fast. I can't disagree with that.
It was in TV time.
What's up?
I said it was in TV time.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, because if it was that easy to do it, you know, like I said, it should have been done by now. Just because.
Well, Stamets did say something about the whatever guy basically kept it on lockdown.
Yeah. No, we're not going to grow them wild. We're going to keep it all to ourselves. Yeah. So, I saw that, that Fred had already sent us several images. I didn't really get a chance to look at them yet, but I did use Fred's image as the like image to put on the blog post last week. Cause it actually helped to identify a 47 that I missed. So from last week, which we'll talk about in the 47 section. But, I'm very happy that you liked it. Obviously, you and Ruthie were pretty much in agreement there.
Simpatico.
Simpatico. All right. Let's move on.
Okay. All right. Todd wrote and says, well, I did not see that twist end coming, but boy, was it a good one. Aside from getting lost a bit when Cornwell and team raided Discovery and tried to figure out where Lorca was and what happened in the 9 months in Prime Universe, this was a strong penultimate episode. I still don't know what Cornwell meant by my Lorca. Did she mean the old mirror Lorca, that presumed identity of Prime Lorca, or was it Prime Lorca back over in Primeverse when Prime Discovery switched with Mirror Discovery? Was there a Prime version of Lorca trapped in Mirrorverse when Mirror Lorca took over Prime's position? Aside from that bit, well done, Ep. And I say she knew Lorca before Mirror Lorca took over Lorca.
Yes, 100% agree with that. She had had a relationship, and you know how she says my Lorca. It makes me wonder, you know, how involved they were, and for how long, because they clearly had a relationship. It was, you know, a question of, you know, how much of it was, you know, a full on relationship, how much of it was friends with benefits.
Yeah, what kind of relationship it was.
Yeah.
Well, he clearly was being opportunistic about it, like, hey, because apparently he's a great womanizer.
Yeah, it seems that way. Yeah, he had its way with many a mirror woman. So I think that, like you, I think that Prime Lorca was killed on the Baran, and maybe that's why he killed the, you know, killed everybody on the Baran to cover it up, because they all knew that he was dead. You know, I don't know how that went down.
Wait, what?
Like, in other words, he beamed over to the Baran. The Baran was already in a fight with the Klingons. I'm thinking Lorca died in battle. So when Mirror Lorca shows up, they're like, who the hell are you? And the only thing that he could do was to blow up the Baran, you know, to cover, basically.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that's how it happened.
How do you think it happened?
Well, they said it was a transporter accident and he was doing something in space or something.
Right.
And I got the impression that he was in some kind of small craft and they were trying to beam the small craft over or something. And that's what got flipped over to Prime Universe. And I don't think he was ever on Prime Baran. I think he just took the story that it was destroyed and it was the destruction of the ship that caused his eyes to be all whatever, whatever. And I don't think he was ever on the Prime Baran. I think he just figured out what happened to his prime version, the prime version of himself, and took over that slot with no one the wiser because his ship exploded.
Exploded.
Explody real good.
Yep. Bloated it up.
That's what I think happened.
I'm surprised you didn't mention that Todd stole your word.
Ah, well, I'll let him have it.
She loves penultimate. She loves it. That's why I was trying to get her to say it at the beginning of the episode. Anyway, Todd, I don't know if we've cleared anything up for you.
I just made it more confusing.
Yes. I don't think we know, and I don't think we're going to know. And for that matter, I don't think it matters. I think the main thing is that Lorca died. The other Lorca died. We're never going to see him. And, you know, that's unfortunate, but, you know, he could have switched over. He could have, you know, so Prime Lorca ended up in the Mirror Universe and went, what the heck is going on? And was completely out of the element and pow, pow, he's dead. You know, but I think he probably never went over. He died before that. So, and you could be right. He could have just used it as a cover. He could have, you know, destroyed them. Maybe he was on a shuttle and he used auto destruct from the shuttle, or maybe he blew them up, you know, fired at them or something when they were pretty much, you know, down. I don't know.
I don't think he had anything to do with the destruction of the Baran, though. The Prime Universe Baran.
Yeah, I'm just throwing spaghetti on the wall and, you know, hoping something will stick. I have no idea. And like I said, I don't think we'll ever know. And I don't think it really matters.
It doesn't, but conjecture is fun sometimes.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to take the next two. This first one's short, but the next one's long. But my voice was kind of given out there, so I let Ruthie do the last one. Mark Olivier, he says, I thought they would go back in time to fix the timeline, not attack the Kronos option. This is not canon. Anyway, there is one episode left to fix everything. I thought it was the weakest episode. I did not like the Tyler scenes and would have liked more resolution to the Klingon War situation. And I said it earlier, I had also expected this to be a time travel episode, or, you know, to set up time travel in the following episode. And I'm surprised that we didn't get it, but I'm surprised in a good way, because the show keeps me guessing. And I like that, despite the fact that I've predicted a lot of stuff, and even that I predicted this episode, you know, because I said last week, wouldn't it be cool if we had Captain Georgiou from, you know, the Emperor, not fully realizing what the heck I was saying, because now we have that. I'm like, oh, that's a bad idea. But still, the show keeps me guessing, and certain things that I expect to see, I don't end up seeing them, or at least I don't see them when I expect to see them. And I love it. Anyway, I love the show. To you, Mark, I would say it may look like it's not canon, but wait until next week and see where things lie. And if it comes out, if they don't explain themselves and suddenly you have a big kind of question mark or something that really doesn't fit in canon after next episode, then okay, I will grant you that. But, you know, and I've said this quite a few times lately, I reserve judgment. I think and I trust at this point that the showrunners and the writers are going to explain everything. They may even explain the colored uniforms at the end. And maybe next season, they'll all be wearing uniforms that are similar to the way what we see in the original series. Who knows? I don't think that that's a necessity, but it's possible. But that said, the show's never going to be able to please everyone, because there's still going to be people out there that expect the technology to look the same as it did 50 years ago. And to those people, I say, watch Star Trek Continues. That's the show that covers it that way. And it's really good, but I don't think that's a way to bring in new viewers, because at this point, I think there are more people that, you know, weren't watching Star Trek in the 70s and 80s now that are fans, or at least there's as many of them, or it's by the end of this series, there'll be more of them. I don't know. But anyway, my point being that Star Trek needs to keep advancing, and you shouldn't get hung up on the things that don't look like 50 years ago. If somehow they blow up Kronos, then yes, that's going to be something that they need to explain, but I don't think they're going to have splaining to do, because I don't think that's going to happen. If that's her plan to blow up Kronos, it's not going to happen next week. It's just not, because to me, that is too far from canon. And I just don't think, seeing all the things that they've done that have been in canon, I can't see them doing this for this episode. But all right, do you got anything to say about what Mark Olivia said?
I don't know why he thinks that attacking Kronos would be not canon. I don't know.
I think if they destroy Kronos, it won't be canon for sure. You know?
Well, who said anything about destroying?
Oh.
Right now, all we know is that they're going to go there.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen when they get there. I don't see there being any issue with canon in that respect.
He's probably also reacting to the fact that, you know, so much of the Federation is occupied, and, you know, half of the, or what was it, a third of the ships are down. The things are not good right now, but that doesn't mean that things won't recover. So, like I say, give it another week and make your decisions from there. James, he says, hey guys, I just wanted to start by saying I'm off the ledge that I was teetering on from last week. We all know how gut reactions go. My questions about the show's play still exist, but for now, I'll just chalk it up to either Discovery existing on an island as a Section 31 experiment or just a retcon. I truly am enjoying the show, but I need to separate it from established lore for the time being. I also wanted to update my rating from last week since I've had time to let things sink in. I'm moving it to 8.5 ever-increasing Lorca Southern drawls. Was I the only one that thought the accent got distinctly thicker that episode, by the way? That being said, we're really seeing just about everything in this show become a redemption arc, at least this far. The writers are treating everything down to bare bones, from characters to Federation ideals. This episode really exposes the vulnerability of the Federation ideal and their willingness to compromise its ideals in order to save itself with Emperor Georgiou's conscription and granting of control in the war efforts. I'm not quite sure what the logic is here, though. While Lorca's command may have had its advantages, his own selfish Terran ideals ultimately caused the Federation to really be in the situation they are now. Do they really think Georgiou will be any different? I'll say kudos for doing what you think is necessary, but don't give her a fake backstory to the crew. Some of the writing in this episode seemed a little suspect as well. On one hand, we had a great interaction between Tyler and Stamets. You could really feel the tension between them. Stamets trying to hold himself together, overseeing the body of the man who killed his lover, and knowing that the person inside wasn't really responsible, and Tyler's memory of Vok killing Culber giving him extreme guilt. Then we see Tyler completely lose his empathy with Burnham and basically say it's her fault. They're not going to be together now. Dude, you really 180'd there. How do you not get it? Another small thing that I thought was odd was the scene in the mess hall. To me, Detmer has been kind of shown to be slow to forgive, at least with Burnham. Yet in this scene, she just gets up and sits with Tyler in a sign of acceptance to him. It just seemed a bit inconsistent to me, and I think the scene would have been better served with just Tilly sitting with him for now to give it a slow reconciliation. Overall, this episode was decent since it was kind of a necessary slowdown to have things climax next week, but definitely looking forward to seeing things really erupt for the finale. Okay, well, I think Lorca's accent's been up and down all season. I'll hear it sometimes and other times not so much, but then again, I've seen this happen in real life, not just with a Southern accent, but, you know, I mean, some will say with my Canadian accent, sometimes it's stronger than other times. So I don't have that much of a problem with it. But then again, I've heard a lot of Southern accents on The Walking Dead by English people. So I think Tyler's lack of getting it, as he called it, may play into the next week's finale. I could see that playing a part in the redemption. I want to single out what you said about Detmer, because I think this is an example, I think, where the show has kind of not done such a great job with those, you know, background characters, those minor characters, because I think, you know, with a line somewhere to Burnham, you know, kind of like seeing that she had finally come around on her before now would have made her sitting down with Tyler less jarring, I guess you could say. Because I do agree with you, and maybe there was something cut, I don't know, but because she was very standoffish with Burnham, you know, in that third episode when she comes back. I still want to know what happens to give her that like 7 of 9 visor thing and fake eye.
You mean on the side of her head?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's a completely different situation though, because wasn't she also on the Shenzhou?
She was.
So she had a personal interest in liking or disliking Michael
right.
in that instance because of the actions that Michael took. I think it's just, I don't know. I think it's different because I think Philippa was a beloved captain. And
yeah,
while I don't think that it's Michael's fault that she died, I think a lot of people irrationally blame her.
Yeah.
Because she was a beloved captain and she didn't survive and blah, 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 word vomit. So I just think it's a little bit different of a situation. But also, like you said, maybe she learned from it. Or did you say that yet?
I did say that.
Read your writing.
You read my writing, but I did say that. And it would have been, because that's what I think happened, that she learned from it, but we didn't see her learning from it. You know what I'm saying?
You're not necessarily going to see everything that happens to a character. There are sometimes you can draw conclusions based on context. Context is king, after all.
It's funny. I was just going to say that when you said context, but you beat me to it.
That's right. Got to be quick.
I don't think calling Georgiou conscribed is really the appropriate term there. Because she wasn't conscribed. She was more like...
Conscripted?
Yeah. She was not conscripted. She manipulated her way into that position. And like a true mirror character would do. And that actually supports what you said earlier about Lorca. That, you know, compare her to other mirror characters. He didn't seem that brilliant. But to me, she is manipulating her way into nefarious things that I don't know what she's got up her sleeve, but it's not good. And so... calling her conscripted, I don't think is accurate. It's more like she negotiated / manipulated her way to that position.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think she said to Sarek that made him go along with it?
I think she appealed to his logic.
Yeah, and there was a whole lot of like, my daughter's smarter than your daughter.
My ward, your ward. Yeah. But then she comes back with, hey, they're not really that different, which, you know, might be true. Honestly, okay, here's the thing about Vulcans. They're very, very logical. The way that they dealt with Klingons in the first place, as we know, is called the Vulcan Hello. So he sees how Starfleet is going, but he also has his own knowledge of how Vulcan dealt with the Klingons. So to him, I think this seems logical. He told Michael... while he didn't tell her to go and become a mutineer, he did basically tell her that the only thing that they respect is force. And I still believe that she was acting logically and in, to her mind, the best interest of the situation based on the information that she was given by Sarek, because Sarek had the experience, the knowledge of his people to draw on. And I think that's exactly what he's doing now. He sees an asset in that she has already conquered the Klingons, basically, in the mirror universe. So to him, I think this is a logical action, I guess, to take.
And is it logical to assume that the Klingons are the same in both universes?
It's not illogical.
'Cause that was one thing that I... had wondered.
Well, I think they probably went through some lengthy debriefs and probably learned all there was to learn about how the Klingons were in that universe, I guess. I mean, I can't even imagine, they probably were talking for a long time. But, I mean, he did get all that information, like the info dump, when he did the mind meld with Saru, so I don't know. Maybe he gleaned what Michael told Saru based on blah, blah, whatever stuff. So that's what I think.
All right. I think that's it for James's feedback. You want to read Stefan's?
Okay. Stefan says, I wonder if Ash Tyler's name was inspired by the malfunctioning android that was in Alien, played by Ian Holm. Huh, I don't know. I also get the feeling that Nicholas Meyer's Star Trek consulting might have been about mapping out the conflict between humans and Klingons. I think of Star Trek 6 that starts with an explosion of Praxis Moon to Kronos. Season 1 has been a great ride, one episode to go. The show looks fantastic and the stories have been entertaining and fun. A highlight was the episode when Harry Mudd went berserk on Discovery, but also when they entered the Mirror Universe. It looks very good for season 2. What a nice tense ending with Mirror Georgiou raised Taryn more Klingon than Klingons, and in her predator eyes, she got dinner close in her crew, Saru. Saru's threat ganglia will work overtime with the Taryn ex-emperor at the helm of Discovery.
Or maybe more appropriately. And I will put this in the context. When Stefan originally gave his feedback, he thought that this was the season finale.
Mm.
So, and I didn't realize this, but for the ones that are watching this on Netflix, I guess they don't get the preview for next week. So I guess that would explain it. But because for those of you that are international viewers listening to us and watching the show on Netflix, in the US anyway, we get like a coming next week thing. So, you know, right at the end of the episode, we get like next week, the season finale. So, yeah. And then on After Trek, they have a scene from next week as well. So, yeah.
Well, all right. I don't really have that much to say about his feedback other than I agree mostly.
Yeah.
I don't know if Ash Tyler's name was inspired by the android and alien, but maybe.
I hadn't thought of that either, but it's possible. I mean, probably the only one. I assume that Brian Fuller came up with it. I haven't heard for sure that's the case, but I assume that he did. So, all right. Well, let's start to get things wrapped up. I think, do you have any additional points that you, because we've been going at it for a long time here. So, we've covered things quite a bit. Is there anything else that we didn't cover?
Well, we didn't talk about the Michael and Sarek scenes, I guess the one scene, which I thought was amazing.
I did too.
He says, do not regret loving someone, Michael. And I just, you know, people always assume that Vulcans just don't have emotions, and they do. They just express them differently. They feel them differently. They keep them under control, but they definitely feel those things. They just don't display it in the same way. And I think, I mean, he was so mechanical when he put his hand on her shoulder. I was like, oh my gosh, that's funny. But for a person who is grown up with him, that probably is as good as a hug goodbye.
Yeah,
I would think. And I mean, you know, logic dictates that in this time, every goodbye could be our last. I was like, oh my gosh, don't kill Sarek. Of course, they can't kill Sarek. But I thought it was great. I thought that scene was great. And then also, you have written down also Cornwell and Laurel.
Yeah,
I thought that was also awesome. Because I kind of think, I'm like, man, she's finally figuring out how to deal with them. Because honestly, the Klingon Empire and Starfleet, or the Federation, they're speaking two different languages.
Yeah.
She is throwing things out there like, they're killing women and children and, you know, blah, blah, all this stuff. And she doesn't understand that for Klingons, that doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
As Laurel said, we're not playing a child's game or whatever she said. It was.
Yeah.
I thought that scene was great because she's finally understanding how they think and how they operate when Laurel says, conquer us or we will never relent.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yeah. And I remember, I think I may have talked about this with Adam in the first half, but I remember there's a scene from Deep Space Nine where Worf, you know, kind of explains the Klingon sense of honor, and victory is honor of itself. So, you know, we see Worf who acts honorably in a way that, you know, we kind of expect honor, but to a lot of Klingons, honor is victory. And, you know, it's not necessarily don't kill innocents or something like that. it means something different to
be the toughest, the biggest, the baddest mofo.
Yeah, exactly.
That's honorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, oh man, I just was going to say something. I totally it left my brain.
About the Klingons?
Oh, yes.
Well, I will say that, that Cornwell Laurel scene was a scene that I was waiting for, because I had thought about as soon as we saw her back and they were back, you know, in the Prime Universe, I was kind of waiting for this meeting because they had interacted, you know, in the first half, and she, Laurel, had said essentially like, I'm impressed. You know, you're
not what I thought.
You're not what I thought. And, you know, that comes back up in this episode. And I see that as being the start of hostilities being ceased eventually. But, you know, something's got to happen. I don't know. I hope that the war doesn't go beyond this season. I do want to see them cover other things. And I think we will see that. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next week. And as I said, I love that.
Yeah. Sorry. I just remembered what I was going to say.
Great. Tell me.
Oh my goodness. That's how thoughts happen in my brain. I mean, there's a reason why they start every sentence and end every sentence with kapla, which is success, because that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
That's how you get honor and glory, is by being successful in whatever endeavors you endeavor to do. Whatever things you endeavor to accomplish, they always wish you success, because that is the mark of a true warrior, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Klingons don't look at, you know, a lot of people, I think successful people look at defeat as something to learn from. Whereas I think Klingons look at defeat as something to kill someone because of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you failed. Off with your head. Or, you know, stab you in both hearts or whatever. I was reacting to some things that I heard people say and online and on other podcasts. And I don't think that this is the case, but, you know, and we know that essentially the, what do you call it? The Kelvin verse essentially, you know, came out of the Prime verse with time travel skewing the timeline. And are we seeing this again? I mean, is the fact that Discovery ended up in the Mirror Universe, does that skew the timeline as well? And, you know, suddenly we're in a different timeline. I don't think so. Or is this like going to turn into Star Trek Sliders? I don't think so either. Of course, I guess with Discovery, it could end up being that way. But I don't think that they ended up in a parallel universe here. It's the same universe. It's just, you know, further ahead in time than they should have been. And when it comes to multiverses, I know that whole thing that created a new universe, but I'm not going to think about that too much.
Yeah. I don't know. They said that they're not going to be in the Kelvin universe. So
yeah,
I don't know what they're going to do. Create their own or stay in the same one. I don't know.
I think that they will stay in and, you know, everything will be explained, or they will end up forward in time to the 25th century. And that's where the spore drive comes in. I don't think so either. That I've heard people say that. I think they are just going to work things out so everything will pretty much line up by the end of next week. And then we'll end up having to spend a year talking about it. So, do you have anything else?
No, I think that was pretty much it.
Okay. Spot the 47. Well, there is a bit of errata.
Incorrect.
Because last week I said there were no 47s, and thanks to Fred's, one of Fred's images from last week, he showed that that was not the case, because Burnham's Mirror Universe badge has a serial number of SHN4790. And we see that clearly on screen, and that was the image for the episode last week that I used. So, Mari did a picture of what he saw, and I picked up on this one as well when they were at that, was it the Vita system? Is that what it's called?
Mm.
And, you know, they were terraforming that moon, and we keep hearing the computer, you know, giving percentage readings. And at one point, while Burnham is on screen, we see the computer say, or in the caption, 47%. So,
all right.
That was the one 47. And then we talked about the second 47 that Cornwall said, which was 4798.6. All right. I believe that's it for this week. To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget, and you can call the voicemail. It's at 304-837-2278. You can send us feedback through our Gmail, which is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Most people send their feedback through our Facebook group on the designated feedback thread that one of us puts up before the episode. It's at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. We've been getting a lot of additional activity on Twitter. I did not look to see if we had anything specific for feedback this week. I didn't see anything, but I didn't get a chance to look today. That's at StarTrekGSM. And we haven't been mentioning this, but I wanted to mention this. We are the exclusive Star Trek Discovery podcast that is available on the TV Time app. And you can actually interact with us there by, you know, commenting on the episode posts when they come up, and like us. And you know, I've been checking those regularly. And for those of you listening to us from TV Time, welcome. And we're really happy about that, having that little representation on there, being the exclusive podcast. The deadline for submitting feedback for the finale next week is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central on Monday, which would be the 12th of February. One of the best ways to support the podcast is to share our posts, especially, you know, Twitter and on the Golden Spiral Media page, which is at facebook.com/goldenspiralmedia. I'll post the episodes up there, and those you can share. If you have a friend who watches Discovery, of course, tell them to check us out. I have a feeling a lot of people will be checking out the show once the finale is available, and people can, you know, binge watch the whole thing. So if you know people that get into the show, then tell them about us. Another great way to support us is by subscribing to us in the podcast app of your choice, such as Apple Podcasts. And you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. That will take you to all the podcasts in the Golden Spiral Media Network. If you use Apple Podcasts, you can help us out by giving us a rating or review. We didn't get any new reviews this week, but for those of you who have done it in the past, thank you so much. There are tons of Star Trek Discovery podcasts, so every little thing you can do to help get the word out is Ruthie and I will appreciate. You can support the network by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The finale episode, which is season 1, episode 15, is titled "Will You Take My Hand?" Now, officially, I don't know who's written or directed it, as we call it's the prolific author and director TBD, but I did see a tweet by co-showrunner Aaron Harberts, and the episode is, he didn't say whether he wrote it or directed it or both, but he said that it is coming to you from Akiva Goldsman, so he will certainly be either writing or directing or both next week. So, and After Trek, if you watch that show, which has been getting better and better, I think has Burnham on there and Stamets. So Sonequa Martin-Green, star of the show, will be on next week, and Anthony Rapp. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.